We just had the most consequential presidential election of our lives. On this episode, Simon and I unpack what it does and does not mean for fintech. Simon, how are things in London today?
Things in London are rainy, you'll be surprised to know. How are things in the United States?
I don't know if you know this because you are part of a monarchy or something, but we elected a new president. Turns out that's pretty important for some things in and around fintech.
Serious? No, I didn't see the news. Nothing happened. What does this even mean for fintech?
Yeah, that's a great question. That's what we're here for. All right, let's unpack it. So what biggest change? Now we've got Trump coming back in January 2024.
The vibe shift in regulation. Fintech was a dirty word. It's no longer a dirty word. All financials are up. Fintech happens to be correlated to financials and correlated to tech, which is also up. I don't know if you saw Tesla and Nvidia, and I don't know if you saw Chase and Bank of America and Wells. Bang, bang, bang. Go look at those stock charts. Absolutely incredible. Why? There's an assumption of deregulation, but is it going to happen? I don't know.
Yeah, and the other big thing, too, is crypto is way up. Bitcoin's at all-time highs. I think the clearest regulatory shift and impact on a potential market adjacent to fintech is the crypto thing, and you can see that happening. I mean, the SEC going after Coinbase, other folks. So that's a big one. I don't want to spend too much time on crypto because I feel like most people understand why that's relevant. But you know, you can see the charts and see things go up and to the right.
Robinhood had a whole thing with the SEC that wasn't even crypto related as well. So it's that deregulation of which crypto is a part. But if you look at the tech story, tech had a lot of stuff with the DOJ and there was a worry about tech more broadly. The banks, you know, they were worried about Basel III Endgame, which is the scariest sounding regulation in history. But TLDR, it would have made banks a lot less profitable. If you hear Jamie Dimon complaining about regulators, it's usually that thing that he cares the most about. And yes, there was open banking and a bunch of other stuff where they were filing lawsuits. But that was the one that everybody's really worried about. So if that goes away, do banks get more profitable now? So I think it's a fair question.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with the capital regulation for banks. I do think another thing, though, that's obvious, and that's, you know, a little bit nebulous. Some of the concrete things, crypto's back, financials up. Just generally, I think people are feeling empowered to try new things, which is in many ways a good thing. Also, maybe we should do a caveat here. Nothing we say is an endorsement for either presidential candidate. We're trying to unpack what's going on for the fintech ecosystem because... But we do have to understand what that looks like. So by no means endorsement here. But one thing that is happening, too, is it's pretty clear, and this goes to the regulatory shift, there have been some memes floating around Twitter of people open to work. So who's in, who's out at certain regulatory agencies?
Yeah, that classic Gensler meme of open to work is definitely there. And I think this comes from a comment from Donald Trump that within day one, Gary Gensler would be fired. Now, of course, the practical reality is that actually might be quite difficult. There's the mechanics of doing that legally, which are incredibly difficult. And in principle, there's no reason why Gary Gensler couldn't stay on. But in practice, there's probably a lot of pressure and leverage that will be brought to bear on the FDIC, on the Treasury, and across the piece. And remember that the OCC has an act.
The FTC with Lina Khan, that's more of a big tech story. Yeah.
So these will all potentially start to change chairs very soon, and that could be quite different. I mean, if you remember under the first Trump administration, Brian Brooks, I believe, was heavily involved in whether it was the CFTC or the SEC, but was a major player in the original BitLicense and many others, and kind of opened a lot of doors for crypto in that stage. So why wouldn't you see that? Also, we saw with the broker deposits rule, you may remember that the FDIC moved that in the wake of the Silicon Valley Bank crisis to try and make it much harder for banks to collect so-called brokered deposits. They moved that threshold. Would that move back? Because it was originally the Trump administration that did move it back to the level it was at pre-SVB. So there could be all kinds of consequences on the regulatory side. But you said something interesting, which is like this could be good for fintech. Tell me more about why.
Yeah, and this is where we're starting to get into the speculative stuff. I think we've covered some of the concrete stuff. crypto good, regulatory regime change in terms of who heads some agencies, maybe on Jan 1, but certainly over the course of Trump's term. Then there are some more speculative things about things that might happen. And some of those things I think are interesting. Maybe we have a fintech bank charter, fintech payments charter, so you don't need a bank to do payment processing. Maybe de novo charters become more open. But that's all speculative, right? That's more reflective of a vibe shift that these things are maybe on the table. So before we start talking about where a vibe shift might go, I want to just reflect on what happened in the last Trump term. And I think there are basically three things. Maybe you'll catch me if I miss anything here. One is rollback Dodd-Frank. For anyone below $250 billion in assets, any bank below $250 billion in assets, lightened regulatory regime around calculating their capital requirements. So that did happen, right? I find it hard to believe that he would roll it back for people much above that, but there's a lot of nuance that goes into how these numbers are calculated. TLDR there is probably impacts banks' profitability at the expense of making banks riskier and more likely to get bailed out. Impact for fintech, I don't think there's a huge impact story for fintech there. That's more about the incumbents who are deposit takers who are governed by Basel. Two, this is the one that's more relevant to fintech. The OCC attempted a fintech charter. That didn't go anywhere, in part because they got sued by the New York Department of Financial Services, or NYDFS. I always get the acronym screwed up, which is funny that a state regulator thwarted a federal regulator's attempt, and then no one tried to push it through. So that was pretty interesting, but nothing happened. And then there are some CRA modernization attempts. So Community Reinvestment Act. Again, is there a big fintech story there? No, that's more about bank and bank governance and maybe tangentially touches fintech. I think the OCC charter was the biggest thing. But even if you get an OCC charter, then someone has to get a charter. That takes a couple of years. And then the market has to understand, what does that charter actually enable you to do? And that's a story that could take 2 to 4 years. And so now we're going back, I think, to the here's what maybe this means for the fintech ecosystem on a go-forward basis if some of these things are back on the table. Which probably the biggest takeaway there is regulatory regime changes and just regulatory changes generally take a long time to permeate through the markets. Like maybe we get an OCC charter, but the first one doesn't get issued for years. Then we don't actually understand what it means for a few more years. And in the meantime, like, oh, AI, crypto, other things can move a lot faster. But I want to hear you react to that and talk about, you know, I think we've kind of covered the concrete things, the past. Now let's talk about like what the vibe shift looks like and on a go forward basis and some of these other things. So you started about Basel rules. We talked about some of these other. So
on the vibe shift side, I think the biggest one will be actually potentially new policy, new laws get made. And the obvious area, again, is crypto. The lack of regulatory clarity, unregulated. I'm giving all of that bunny ears because the reality is nothing in financial services regulation is particularly clear. And also it's regulated, but the regulations overlap and there are some things that just don't capture the risks fully. I do suspect we'll get a stablecoin bill very, very early in the term. And I do suspect we'll start to see something around the tokenization of real world assets and start to bring some stuff. Definitions are still going to be a nightmare. You're still going to have Schrodinger's security. You know, is it a security? Is it not? But I do think we'll get some commentary from a future SEC.
Funny story there. Gary was telling Coinbase, oh, you can only do Bitcoin and Ethereum, which are governed by the CFTC, which is a commodity. So basically, those would be treated as commodities. So like, you just also have this regulatory, to the point of regulatory uncertainty and regulators, you know.
Which is where you need Congress to sort of make laws, because the regulators are fighting it out amongst themselves. But if you're a regulator, the problem you've got is you can see the risks over there. You want to do your job of fixing the risk. But until Congress says this is your purview, you kind of have to work within the rules and try and use the court system a little bit, regulation by enforcement. And like, that's a risky strategy because you can piss off an entire industry, which it appears that that approach has managed to do to the crypto industry. And then they can become active lobbyists pushing in a different direction for political opponents of that particular agency. So that's an interesting vibe shift that I haven't seen anywhere else in the world. Meanwhile, Singapore is pushing the boundaries of what it can do with regulation, but on a proactive side. The UK has just positioned a stablecoin bill. Mika has been live in Europe for some time. The world's largest capital market, that is the next thing right off the docket.
That's what happens when you get a Brit on. You have to talk about the rest of the world. You can't just talk about America.
How about that? But, you know, like, I was still comparing America yeah. to the world. So America is still in there yeah. in some way, shape, or form. Does that help?
No, it is. It is. It is. We appreciate that. Yeah, we appreciate
us.
That for sure. I want to react to something you said, though. You said Trump is going to do new regulation about crypto. So there are two parts of that. New regulation, crypto. And I'll agree with that in a narrow sense. If Trump does any new regulation in financial services, it's most likely to be about something that is popular and buzzy, because that's just the kind of stuff he likes to do, and that would probably be around crypto. My general perspective of Trump is that he is not a particularly effective leader in terms of getting a lot of new things done, but it's easier sometimes to get rid of things or, like, certainly remove people. And so in terms of, like, new things he would attempt, something like buzzy around, like, crypto, like some new rule and clarity of rulemaking, he, I think, will attempt. That could be good just to give clarity to people. But in terms of new rulemaking for banking capital regulations around Basel III, that doesn't play very well on Twitter or Truth Social. And so his appetite to actually drive changes through some of these more nuanced ways by doing new legislation, I just don't see that happening, right? Now, by having new people in charge of key regulatory agencies, sure, maybe that's a thing.
But remember the Senate Banking Committee Chair also lost his seat in Congress. So you now have a position where there's a lot more at stake than the presidential election. The Senate has changed dramatically. The House looks like it might change as well. There's a possibility here that laws could get passed. And with that kind of a mandate, you can pass new laws in a way that very few administrations have in recent history. There's probably a 2-year window, and right at the front of that are the two laws that almost got passed in the last session around crypto. They were perilously close, and that was with some Democratic majorities and a Democratic president. So the other way round, I think those would fly through. And the crazy thing about those bills is they actually had quite a lot of bipartisan.
That's a great point. There wasn't just a presidential regime change. We have one party in control of all three branches, and that empowers those new leaders to try and push things through. And Trump, he might not be the driving force behind new rules in banking, but will he rubber stamp something? Yeah. Probably.
And if it sounds like deregulation, then it sounds like a good thing for the thing to the guy to go on TV and talk about. So I think your broader point is correct. I want that narrative. I want that thing that plays well on TV. And look, you know, in the same time, we've seen companies like Visa do. Their stock has done really well in the last sort of 24, 48 hours because there was worries about the DOJ. Now, does some of that pressure start to go away on Visa? What does that look like? Will they get into open finance now? Can they get into open finance? What happens to Apple and all of the work that was happening there? Does big tech get to play more in finance? So I think there's a lot to unpack there.
Yep. If you're a venture capitalist, can you sell a company for a few billion dollars to an incumbent? You know, a month ago, the answer is probably not. The answer today, maybe.
Yeah, because those incumbents were going to have a kind of question mark from the DOJ if they did go that route. They were buying everything but anything close to their core business. And now, all bets are off. M&A might be open again. And what does that mean for the IPO window and the public markets? But then also, if you look at the historical trend, I saw something on Bloomberg earlier today that, like, the prices of stocks have been benefiting dramatically from the AI bubble that we've been in. So we've been in an AI bubble. Stocks are near an all-time high. And then you add a Trump bubble to it. And then where do we go from here? Like, are we running into some weird parabola? The forward end of the yield curve, treasuries are really going up. So
this is what I wanted to talk about.
Because this means
a couple things have gone up: crypto, financial stocks, stocks generally, and also treasury yields. And if you look at the projected U.S. government deficit, and we can find a chart here and throw it up, you'll see that under a Trump presidency, it's projected to be a lot higher than it was under a Democratic regime, due in large part to the tax cuts. That has to be financed by issuing more debt. Issuing more debt means the price of treasuries go up. But this is also connected to what you're talking about, the AI bubble. Another thing that drives up the cost of capital across the whole economy is when demand for capital goes up, and the big tech companies are spending $200 billion a year on AI CapEx. That's just five companies. It's very real, just AI CapEx in the next year, 2 years, both on the private and public sector, hit something like $1 trillion. And that's material, right? Like, we're a $20 trillion economy. That's just a huge amount of demand for capital. What does that mean for fintech? One thing that it means, probably the bigger thing, is if that happens, like, AI is so real that it's just going to pervade every aspect of building companies, especially in financial services. But another kind of second order effect is if cost of capital goes up, interest rates go up, financial services, even fintech, is more correlated, or aspects of it are more sensitive to rate changes than other aspects of tech, because you might, you know, have parallel debt facilities or depend on bank funding or that sort of stuff. And so there will be kind of a rate story of rates being higher for longer, potentially because of AI and deficit spending.
And I wonder if the tax cuts mean inflation, tariffs mean inflation. So now you've got a consumer who's still struggling with the cost of goods and the cost of living at one end of the economy, the haves and the have-nots and the wealth divide. And you've also, so the real economy is kind of suffering. This tech economy is doing really well, but some fintech companies did really well out of rates rising. The practical reality is when yields, treasury yields go up, that was difficult to say, then rates will follow. So this is a matter of time till rates need to come back up again. Inflation will follow. This we could end up going through like a whipsaw motion here in a few years' time. So whilst it feels like really great, the S&P and the stocks are near all-time highs. It looks like inflation's coming back. Therefore, rates would have to rise. We've just lived through that movie. Can AI carry there, or are we heading for a storm in the near future?
And I don't like prognosticating too much about where inflation is going, but I do think you can make a story, or even where interest rates are going, but I do think you can make a story where rates are higher longer with or without inflation. And that's an interesting, I think, point to make. This also, we're talking about projections here, which reminds me of something else I want to cover. I think the biggest winner from election night that everyone should be excited about is prediction markets, right? Polymarket, Kalshi, we'll get this maybe chart from Polymarket, which shows 95% confidence they called the election in all of these states hours before the press. And that's because markets are truth-seeking machines. They've been kind of illegal in the U.S. to have prediction markets. One of the prediction market companies, Kalshi, they actually won a case against the CFTC to be able to do these event-based contracts. And they went from being, you know, a five-year slog to an overnight success story that's number one in the App Store, traded volumes well over $300 million, I think, on just the presidential election, not to mention the other stuff. But the utility for the public is you don't have to listen to talking heads like Simon of my or myself or, you know, the Associated Press or mainstream media. If you want to understand, oh, is Gary still going to be in seat in January? Well, there's probably going to be a prediction market for that soon. Right. And so not just in the election, but going forward on some of these questions of what is going to change. The general public became aware that prediction markets are good at predicting things more so than the media. And now, like, I hope we just build this muscle as a society of looking to them to help kind of understand some of these questions about where we're going, even if that means, you know, they don't have to listen to you and me, Simon, and talk about
what
we think might happen with no skin in the game.
They can still be entertained. It's interesting, though, that, like, market prices, rate hikes and rate cuts and is often wrong. But remember, rates, interest rates are set by a policy committee of a few people, whereas elections are decided by a crowd, a swarm of humanity. And markets are much better at pricing swarm behavior than they are the, a collection of individuals. The markets, prediction markets were written off as, well, poly markets or crypto bros, they're going deep on crypto anyway. And actually, no, it's been pretty accurate consistently. And also, I see Robinhood has launched its sort of prediction market-like contracts as well on the back of the case that was won with the CFTC. This will become normal. I think we're going to see them start to gain traction more broadly. And that's interesting. What does that do for everything in finance? What does that do for your consumer fintech app? It's sitting there in Robinhood. Wow.
I mean, we're at this moment where people are like, what is true? And who do I go to? Do I go to the media? Do I go to Twitter? And prediction markets are a place where you can go and you can see, in a way that's, you know, more true than anywhere else, people have skin in the game. And so I think this is their moment. When you're losing faith in a lot of different institutions, prediction markets are there to say, like, look, this is markets ingesting information, making predictions about what will happen. And so I think that's going to be, that's good for Sai. The investor in me is also curious of another question. It's like, which prediction markets win and why? And maybe it's just a rising tide lifts all boats thing, but, you know, Kalshi's a new company, or newer than Robinhood, focused just on this. Robinhood has massive distribution, but now they have to integrate a new kind of product into their core offerings. They've already got, you know, day trading options, day trading crypto, day trading event-based contracts. They're pretty good at products, so, you know, maybe they can do. So that'll be interesting to see. And then Polymarket, they're not licensed in the U.S. because they're crypto, or rather they're not U.S.-based users are not allowed to use Polymarket. Maybe that changes under a Trump presidency. So that will be interesting to watch too.
Yeah, that whole geofencing thing might be interesting to watch. Who knows? Maybe we need a prediction market on prediction markets. Like, are they going to take off or not? That's going to be the sort of snake eating its own tail. But there's just so much to unpack here. We could probably go on for ages. The one thing I've not seen people really dive into is the impact on the broader payments ecosystem. So we had Open Finance, we had 1033, we've had Visa, DOJ, but like, is there going to be any rules around payments? Are there going to be any rules that come that really upset the apple cart of what does the consumer wallet experience look like in the future? What happens to banks? Is Pays going to take off? There's all of these things where it's like account aggregation and...
Well, let's answer the easiest question first. What happens to 1033 and open banking? I think generally the consensus is nothing. It's been accepted. Consumers should have their own data. That's fine. These other questions, though, have a lot more...
We're going to keep running, I'm sure. There's stock market's going to keep bouncing around. There's going to be a lot to talk about. This is a big moment.
We're at the top of the hour. I know you've got to go. So you want to wrap it up for us?
Yeah, I think last but not least, quietly in other news, Wise profits were up 55% and they partnered with Standard Chartered. So meanwhile, there's all of this news going on. FinTech actually had a great week. So for those of you that were like, oh my God, I can't deal with all of this news, there's still FinTech happening and FinTech is still ripping. So the wrap up for me is, there's a lot going on. There's a lot about to change, but FinTech is still just grinding away, doing its thing. Regulation, let's see. What goes ahead, let's see. It's going to be fun to come back next week and see where we are.
Tempted to try and do like a bullet list of all the things we covered, but it's too many things. So I think the bigger takeaway is just when you have a vibe shift, more things tend to happen faster. And that's something I'm definitely starting to feel.
Acceleration. Here we go.
I think that's a good note to end on. So I'll see you next week.
Till next week.
Cheers. That's a wrap for this week. If you feel like there's anything we might have missed or not covered in sufficient detail, feel free to hit it up in the comments. We'll see if we can address it next time. And if you want to follow this, get more updates, we do this on a roughly weekly basis. So feel free to hit like or subscribe. And until then, catch you next time.